This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Sarah Gardner. There will be 9 billion people on the planet by the middle of this century. That's what the UN tells us. How are we going to feed all those people? That's the question we're asking in our year-long series, Food for 9 Billion. Today, a story out of Africa, where multinational supermarket chains are racing to serve new customers. The chains offer more clean stores, more variety, better quality. But will it be local? Reporter Gretchen Wilson went to Zambia and Lesotho to see whether these new supermarkets will be a blessing or a curse for Africa's tens of millions of small farmers.
At the Baoleni Outdoor Market in Lusaka, Zambia, it's Market Economics 101. Hawkers pile tomatoes and beans on rickety tables. Here, anyone can bring something to sell, and anyone can come to barter. The tables stand on dirt. There's no refrigeration. The air's thick with the smoke of cooking fires. Across much of sub-Saharan Africa, markets like these are still where most people get their groceries. Joyce Chicha is with the African Center for Food Security at the University of KwaZulu-Natal.
I've seen rotten meat. Meat that looks like it shouldn't be at a marketplace being sold, because there's no other options.
Increasingly, there is an option. Supermarket chains are expanding all over Africa. And they're not just changing the way Africans shop. They're transforming the way food is produced in a region where agriculture provides almost 60% of all jobs. Again, Chicha.
The main problem of the small farmer is market access. How will they put it into the marketplace?
As supermarkets spread, they could lift millions of small farmers out of poverty by buying from them. Or competition from big commercial farms could ruin them. I'm standing in a pick and pay that opened here in Lusaka 2 years ago. It looks like any American supermarket.
Everybody shops at this store, from very high class to people who've only got a dollar to spend on merchandise.
Andy Roberts is Zambia manager of Pick and Pay. The South African chain now has 4 stores in Zambia, 2 more open this year.
We believe that we could do 20 stores here. So yeah, it is a land of opportunity.
In Zambia, the farmers' union is politically powerful. So when Pick and Pay opened its stores, the government insisted it buy at least half its goods from Zambian suppliers. Today, more than 3/4 of the store's produce comes from within the country. On their own, small farmers often struggle to supply the quantities and quality the big grocery store chains need. In Zambia, some producers are working together. This independently owned packhouse consolidates produce from about 60 farmers who bring their tomatoes or onions in pickup trucks or even wheelbarrows whenever they can.
Majority are small-scale farmers.
Troy Dingle runs the packhouse. He says he gets 5 or 6 phone calls a day from local farmers wanting to supply Pick and Pay.
And the first thing we would do is ask them for a sample.
If the sample's good enough, Dingle's team visits their farms, checks the water supply, and then trains them in quality standards.
We try and assist and purchase from whoever approaches, as long as it is to our requirements.
The packhouse is where produce is prepped for supermarket shelves. A woman in a hairnet stands at a stainless steel table, trimming corn cobs with a cleaver. Over here, other women hunch over cling-wrapped broccolis, slapping on price stickers. Down a dirt road near the packhouse is a 6-acre farm owned by Arnold Chimfembe, a tall and trim 62-year-old. He strides through his fields in rubber boots and points to his favorite kind of cabbage.
It's always green like that. So this one is resistant to rain, anything.
He used to sell vegetables at outdoor markets, but there were a lot of lean times. Then he approached the pack house, and when the first Pick and Pay opened in Lusaka, it was his leafy greens that made it on the shelves. He now delivers to the pack house 2 or 3 days a week.
I think I'm one of the most consistent suppliers.
One reason is that he's organized 4 of his neighbors to grow vegetables too. So when the pack house calls his cell phone with a big order, he can deliver.
The money that I get, it's, cutters for my upkeep of the vehicle. Electricity, things like that, then I'm very happy. I can do better.
But the ones who benefit are still a small minority. Chimfembe says that if he lived 5 or 10 miles farther from the packhouse, he wouldn't bother taking his vegetables there.
It's not worth it. because all that money will go to fuel. So that's a big challenge.
Globalization often means small farmers also have to go up against cheap imports from places like the U.S. and Brazil. Ed Mabaya is with the Cornell International Institute for Food, Agriculture and Development.
So you're seeing farmers not only having to compete with their neighbor, but competing against the world.
That's true in Lesotho, a small mountainous country landlocked by South Africa. More than half of the 2 million people here engage in farming, but an estimated 99% of supermarket goods are imported from South African agribusinesses through border posts like this one. That leaves little room for 73-year-old Tsaliso Lemetlele. He pulls on his wool hat against the chill, then walks down the narrow rows of his tiny sliver of land.
Come around to this.
Like most small farmers, he carries all the financial risks himself, and he's been wiped out time and again. His crops have been stolen by thieves and trampled by cattle. Last year, he managed to lease a field out of town and was about to harvest green beans and pumpkins.
And floods just wiped me out completely. I had to start from scratch.
But he keeps trying.
People in farming have sawdust in their heads. We carry on regardless. There's another litter here. We have 3 litters right now.
The Farmers Union in Lesotho is just getting started, and the government is weak, so there are few advocates for farmers like Lebenklele. He bought a few pigs, but the supermarkets told him they don't trust the hygiene standards of local butchers.
These supermarkets will not touch them, because look, if anything, let's say, were to go wrong, then they would be liable.
So he's growing a few rows of cabbages and spinach in a borrowed greenhouse. They're beautiful. But alone, he just can't produce at the scale that the supermarkets want.
I'm scared of going to these companies and say to them, look, I can supply you with this and this, because I'm a small man. If you cannot supply on a continuous basis, right, it's very, very, very difficult to hold markets.
Food policy experts say Africa's small farmers could compete. They need the same things commercial farms already have: credit, market information, transportation and storage, and supermarkets ready to buy from them. By boosting the incomes of tens of millions of farmers, the chains could also create a new crop of shoppers. In Maseru, Lesotho, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Our series Food for 9 Billion is a collaboration with Homelands Productions, PBS NewsHour, and the Center for Investigative Reporting. You can find photos of Africa and more stories by visiting our special collection, Food for 9 Billion, on marketplace.org.